This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiz Wuhibi in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The reason are multidimensional. One, there is a lockdown in place. The lockdown restricts movement. It now reduces outpatient turnout. Secondly, the fear of the coronavirus, knowing that the hospital environment is a high-risk area.
That's Dr. Kamisi Chinedu, a medical officer in the Kaduna State Ministry of Health in Nigeria, on outpatient visits dropping by half due to COVID-19 fears. Details coming up also. The UN-backed Government of National Accord has now extended its control across most of northwest Libya, reversing many of Khalifa Haftar's gains. And Nigerian economists warn loss of revenue from oil sales could plunge the country into recession. All these ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Cameroon says hundreds of hospital patients have fled health facilities after a jump in cases of COVID-19. Cameroon has about 7,400 confirmed cases and more than 205 deaths from the coronavirus, according to the Johns Hopkins University COVID-19 dashboard. Patients say they are afraid of catching the coronavirus at hospitals, but health officials warn that not getting needed treatments for other health issues can put them at higher risk. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Health Minister Manauda Malachi says the highest number of patients who have fled hospitals are in the western towns of Bamenda and Bafoussam, the capital Yaoundé, and the economic capital of Douala, where confirmed cases of COVID-19 disease are increasing by the day.
On a constaté que lorsque nous avons créé
Manauda says he has noticed that each time special wards for COVID-19 patients are created in hospitals, ordinary Cameroonians begin thinking that if they go to such hospitals, they will contract the illness. He says Cameroonians should know that hospital wards dedicated to COVID-19 patients are separated from those where sick people are either consulted or hospitalized. He says President Paul Biya has, however, given instructions and the government is constructing special care centers for sufferers. Manauda said about 600 patients have so far fled from health facilities, while thousands of others are avoiding hospitals for fear of becoming infected. 31-year-old banker Wilfred Awemo says he decided to seek African traditional treatment for his malaria because he no longer trusts hospitals in Cameroon.
When you go with a little illness now like this, most especially when you have a health complication and then you are going for a checkup, they will just take your temperature, and if it goes above 37, they just say that you are a suspect and then they try to quarantine you.
Authorities are putting all suspected cases under quarantine. If a person tests negative, he or she is still kept under observation for 14 days. Dr. Gertrude Asu, who is working with the Public Health Ministry, says the government has sent out representatives to encourage people to stop going to traditional healers and visit hospitals.
We are trying to sensitize the population that the probability of contracting COVID in a hospital is just as the same as getting in the marketplace or in the church or in the community. So we just require them to protect themselves when they go to the hospitals, and we respect all the preventive measures. We will not have any problem.
Since the first cases of COVID-19 were reported in Cameroon 3 months ago, the government and health workers have been asking civilians to consider the situation as a serious health threat and refer suspected cases to hospitals. The government says confirmed cases continue to rise because many people either do not believe it exists or refuse going to hospitals for treatment until their symptoms worsen. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Forces loyal to Libya's internationally recognized government claim they have captured the last major stronghold of Eastern Commander Khalifa Haftar near Tripoli today. Reuters reports this move caps the sudden collapse of Haftar's 14-month offensive on Libya's capital. Military sources in Haftar's Libyan National Army, LNA, admit their forces have withdrawn from the town of Tarahuna and are heading towards Sirte. The UN-backed Government of National Accord, or GNA, now has extended its control across most of northwest Libya, reversing many of Haftar's gains from last year when he raced towards Tripoli. The GNA has been backed by Turkey, while Haftar, whose Libyan National Army still controls the east and oil fields in the south, has been supported by Russia, Egypt, and the United Arab Emirates. Hundreds have been killed and 200,000 displaced since Haftar launched his assault, vowing to cleanse the capital of the terrorist militias he claims dominate the GNA. Some Nigerian economists warn that the loss of revenue from slumping oil sales will hurt the economy and cause a recession. They suggest that Nigerian government should provide funds for companies shut down by COVID-19 to boost the economy. Mike Mbonier reports from Lagos.
As the world has shut down to fight the coronavirus pandemic, global oil sales have collapsed and the price of oil has dropped more than half. In Nigeria, some oil operations have stopped entirely as the country imposed restrictions on business and travel to slow the spread of the virus. Professor K. Onochukwu is an economist and the director of the University of Port Harcourt Business School. He says the losses caused by COVID-19 on oil production and sales in Nigeria are enormous. Onochukwu says the loss of revenue has affected government finances at all levels.
So, and in terms of general impact on the economy, it's really having serious negative impact on Nigeria economy. In fact, after COVID, you know, I'm thinking that Nigeria will go into recession and the level of recession is going to be high.
Onochukwu says government should provide bailout funds for companies shut down during COVID-19 restrictions to overcome recession.
For us to come out of that, it means that government has to do something in order to motivate, you know, some of the firms that have closed, you know, to come back to production. You know that during this COVID, so many companies closed down and they've lost revenue a lot. And some of them, after COVID, might not survive, might not find their feet, unless there is a bailout from government. And it's only when government gives them bailout that they can, you know, begin to come up.
Onochukwu, however, says any government bailout funds will be expected to come from oil revenue, which has fallen drastically. He suggests other measures that can be used to check a recession in the coming months.
We just pray that we don't run into very serious recession. To come out of that, it means that we have to borrow to raise funds, or we run down our reserve, or run down sovereign welfare fund to get money to run the economy.
Already, the National Assembly has approved $28.2 billion loan request by President Muhammadu Buhari to finance the 2020 budget. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
Outpatient visits to Nigerian hospitals reportedly have dropped by half due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Reporter Gift Agariga from Abuja, Nigeria, takes a look at the reasons.
During a recent briefing by the Presidential Task Force on COVID-19, Health Minister Dr. Sagye Ehanire expressed concern that the coronavirus is taking a toll on the country's health services. He said the latest statistics from the National Health Management Information System showed that outpatient hospital visits by pregnant women and other people had plunged by half. Many Nigerians say they are staying away from hospitals due to fears of contracting the virus or being abandoned by healthcare workers if they show symptoms similar to COVID-19. Dr. Kamsi Chinedu, a medical officer in the Kaduna State Ministry of Health, admitted that outpatient visits during the pandemic have been low.
The reasons are multidimensional. One, there is a lockdown in place. The lockdown restricts movement. It now reduces outpatient turnout. Secondly, the fear of the coronavirus, knowing that the hospital environment is a high-risk area.
He spoke amid reports that hospitals have been rejecting patients. Chinedu, however, said hospitals have seen an increased enrollment in antenatal care.
There has been increase in the number of pregnancies within this period. This is not unlikely with the lockdown. When you lock a husband and wife and they're at home, the likelihood of pregnancy is high.
Norma Agbenson, a pregnant mother, described her recent hospital visit as discouraging.
I went to the hospital to register for antenatal. The next thing the nurses said to me that I should please go back home. There is no registration, there is no antenatal for now. I was like, why? They said because of COVID-19.
No doubt, the pandemic caught many countries unprepared, including Nigeria, where hospitals lack enough equipment to address large-scale emergencies. Health caregivers are avoiding face-to-face interaction with patients to avoid contracting the virus. Christian Uto narrated how his father was neglected in the Federal Medical Center until he died.
I brought my dad into FMC at the emergency ward precisely, and they just looked at him, administered drip, and they left. Waited for almost like 2 hours, begging the nurses and the doctors to come and fix oxygen, of which we finally had to fix it on him. While we not enter, just look at him and shout coronavirus.
There are fears that more Nigerians will die of other diseases than COVID-19 will ever kill if nothing is done. For VOA News, this is Gift Agiriga from Abuja, Nigeria.
Armed bandits have killed 21 people in the latest bloody assault on villages in restive northwest Nigeria. The French news agency AFP, quoting regional police spokesman Mohamed Shehu, says assailants trying to steal cattle on Tuesday shot dead 15 people in clashes with local residents in 6 remote communities of Zamfara State. They returned the next day and shot 6 mourners at funerals for the earlier victims. Public schools in Botswana reopened this week after a 2-month break due to COVID-19, but some remained closed as they failed to meet new safety requirements. Mokandisi Dube reports from the capital, Habrone.
This week, Botswana reopened schools following the end of a 7-week lockdown on May 21. While the government made efforts to upgrade facilities at public schools, some were not ready on the day of reopening on Tuesday. Botswana Federation of Public Sector Unions Secretary General Tabogani Harare said the reopening should have been delayed.
The best solution in our view is that we should push the deadline or the timeline for reopening of schools by 2 weeks so that we could then have pushed those that are behind to also move towards complying so that when we restart schools, all schools should reopen at the same time.
Rari estimates that around 60% of public schools had not met new safety standards. The government embarked on an exercise to upgrade public schools to improve hygiene. This included installing washing basins and building additional toilets. While most learners heeded the call to return to class, some parents, like 38-year-old resident Wabon Mutise, remain skeptical.
I will not want to take chances. They are concerned that some schools are not ready. I will not therefore take any risk sending my child to school now. She will only go after I am fully satisfied that the school is compliant.
President Mokgweetsi Masiso is expected to tour some schools in Habron on Friday to check progress. He said his government will do its best to protect teachers and students from COVID-19 infection.
The education system is ready to adapt to the new normal. To this end, class sizes have been reduced by half to provide for social distancing, and health and safety measures will be high on their daily agenda.
Only students sitting for their final year examinations returned to class. The remaining grades are expected back by mid-June. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Habaroni.
Some parts of Kenya's capital have been without running water for weeks after a landslide destroyed a water pipe, making frequent hand washing for coronavirus prevention a challenge. Water distribution points have been set up to help tens of thousands of Kenyans cope. Muhammad Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
For more than 2 months, Maureen Mkala has taken this narrow alley in Mathare Slum in Nairobi to get water for her family, including 3 children. For more than 2 months, Maureen Mkala has taken narrow alley in Mathare Slum in Nairobi to get water for her family, including 3 children. She ends up at a crowded water point and it takes her an hour to get 20 liters of water.
So naenda tu nitafute maji ili ninawe mkono.
Mkala says, I look for water to clean my hands so that I don't get the virus. She says, we have a water problem and you are forced to go to the crowded water points to get water. She explains, it doesn't matter whether I get the virus or not. All I do is to get water to clean myself so that I don't get the virus. A landslide in April destroyed a major water pipe in central Kenya, cutting off running water to entire Nairobi neighborhoods. The need for water has increased due to the COVID-19 pandemic, as more people are encouraged to wash hands regularly to limit the spread of the virus. Rhoda Angaya says she is forced to ignore health guidelines in order to get water.
Watu ni wengi, tumepanga line.
There are many people at the water point, she says. We are all converged at one point. We are asked to keep 1 meter distance to limit the spread of the coronavirus, she says. She asks, how can we keep the required distance and all of us are fighting to get the little water? In central Kenya, engineers are fixing the water line to restore running water supplies, which fell by as much as 20%. The Nairobi City Water and Sewerage Company says they have already reduced the water loss to about 10%, and the new line being installed will resolve the shortage, says Nahashon Muguna of Nairobi City Water and Sewerage Company.
There won't be any landslides where we are taking the line through. The line, the alignment is around 3.4 kilometers. We expect by mid-June we will be through with it. Already the road work has been done, 80 kilometers, so all the materials can be able to assess the site easily.
For the people of Mathare and tens of thousands of others forced to collect water during the pandemic, the work cannot be finished soon enough. Mohamed Yusuf for VA News, Nairobi.
Kenyan authorities have charged a police officer with murder for the shooting death of a teenage boy while the officer enforced a coronavirus curfew. Rights activists say Kenyan police use of excessive force during the pandemic has been among the deadliest in the world. Kenya has reported 74 deaths due to COVID-19, but rights groups claim police have killed at least 26 people while enforcing measures aimed at stopping the virus. April Zhu reports from Nairobi.
Kenya's Independent Policing Oversight Authority, or IPOA, on Thursday announced a police officer was being charged with murder in the shooting death of Yasin Hussein Moyo. The 13-year-old boy was standing on the balcony of his parents' home in Nairobi on March 30th when he was hit by a bullet as police enforced a nighttime coronavirus curfew. Jonathan Ludumpui is vice chairman of the Policing Oversight Authority, a civilian group established to investigate and audit police misconduct. He says more officers have been disciplined, but he would not disclose how many.
They have really been disciplined. Some of them have been recalled, some of them have been addicted, and some certain disciplinary action or role models have already been preferred against others.
The IPOA said Thursday that 5 other police officers were facing charges over other deaths, shootings, and assaults that predated Kenya's curfew. In a statement earlier this week, the oversight body said 15 deaths linked to police during the curfew are under investigation. But rights groups say since Kenya's curfew began March 27th, police are responsible for at least 26 deaths, the vast majority in poor neighborhoods. Juliet Wanjira is secretariat of the Mathare Social Justice Center, an organization that documents extrajudicial police killings. She says charges brought against officers have not led to fewer civilians being killed.
Arresting the killer of Yasin Moyo is not going to bring Yasin Moyo back. It's not going to. What is justice really? Justice is preventing more Yasin Moyos from being killed. And that is what we need IPOA and this government to do.
Public anger is beginning to boil over. Video on social media showed protesters defying the curfew Monday night in Nairobi's Mathare slum and setting tires on fire in outrage over the shooting death of an elderly homeless man. The protesters accused Kenyan police of killing the man, whom locals called Vaite, while enforcing the curfew. Speaking to Kenya's NTV News Tuesday, Kenya police spokesman Charles Obino claimed that Vaite was shot not by police, but by men on motorcycles.
If any police officer, including myself, if I take law into my hand and I kill someone, you will not need to expose it. I'll be taken to court.
The Police Oversight Authority says Vaite's death is one of those being investigated. The IPOA says 87 complaints of police violence have been lodged since the curfew, including shootings, robbery, and sexual assault. The executive director of Amnesty International Kenya, Irungu Houghton, says the spike in cases shows that not enough disciplinary actions are being taken.
If you continue to retain a veil of secrecy around both the disciplinary actions that you're taking and the officers that are being disciplined, then essentially what you are sending as a signal to the other officers is that they can continue to do what they're doing and that there will be no consequences.
Kenya's prosecution of police officers is exceedingly rare. Since its establishment in 2012, IPOA has convicted only 7 police. April Drew for VOA News, Nairobi.
Uganda banned the use of public and private transport in late March to curb the spread of COVID-19. With the ban on cars, the country has seen a boom in demand for bicycles. Halima Tumani reports from Kampala.
While most Ugandan workers are worried about losing their jobs due to the coronavirus pandemic, business is booming for bicycle repairman Chiemba Msiri. Uganda's March lockdown to curb the virus included a ban on motor vehicles, both public and private, for non-essential personnel. Msiri says that made the demand for bicycles and bicycle repairs skyrocket. He says he has really benefited from the lockdown. He says because generator and lawn mowing machine owners have not been coming, he got more people asking for bicycles. He says he had lots of bicycle stock and sold them all. It's been very profitable, he says, and he has achieved so much these weeks that he'd only hoped to do in the future. Bicycle dealer James Chirembeka agrees the transport ban has boosted business, but he says the high demand and economic impact from the coronavirus has also raised costs for bicycles and spare parts. He says most people are broke. They no longer have money because you'll buy a bicycle like this one at $93 or $106. You sell it to a customer at $132, he says, yet the customer wants to buy it at $66. Uganda earlier this month eased the lockdown by allowing skilled laborers such as factory workers, mechanics and builders back to work. But commuting by bicycle is a challenge for many, like painter Ziwa Ramadan, who must travel 18 kilometers to get to work.
The president said that we must stop by 5 p.m. And you find yourself by 5 p.m. you're still at work and you have to ride a long way. Sometimes you just have to lift it up or you just have to walk, pushing it for you to pass by the load blocks.
While there are still concerns about COVID-19, many Ugandans are looking forward to the day when public transportation resumes and they can get a lift back to work. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbil Yabaro, thanks again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Hey,
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.